Welcome to Nil. My name is Quentin Irie.
And I am James King.
Really milking the suspense out of that there.
I gotta change it up. I've been doing the same thing for too long. And I think the time before that I said your name back to you. And, you know, I gotta do something different. So
we're just testing. I feel like all of them are just some variation on you taking a really long time to say you're part of it.
I gotta extend the format somehow, man. Otherwise, we're gonna be in and out too fast. We gotta get those insights up, man.
There's nothing to increase playtime like dead air.
Only idea, best idea.
What have you been up to, man?
Oh, just listening to your music, your depressing album. didn't help that this morning was like really overcast and rainy. I had to listen to some upbeat stuff after to get me right. It's like watching cartoons after a horror movie. I was like, I gotta get out of this mental place. Part of me, like, I listen to a lot of more melancholy stuff, I think, normally anyway. I don't really know why, but I just do. Like, I'm just normally like slower songs. And so I try to combat that, though, because I can kind of get into this groove where it's like my personality is already more probably drawn to that. So it's good to kind of try to pull myself out. And music affects you so profoundly. People don't understand that. Like, I don't think the extent to which that affects your psychology. So I've been trying to be better about that. Anyway, what about you? You're training for a marathon, Mr. Run 2 hours a day. That's insane.
Well, you know, that actually ties in to avoid the usual, like, oh, you know, same old, man. I found myself saying that a lot lately when people ask me how I'm doing. I'd be like, oh, you know, same thing I always am doing.
Working, living the dream.
Living, raising my kids or whatever.
Don't be that guy.
So to avoid that, two interesting developments that both tie into things that have been kind of hinted at that probably deserve their own future episodes in the future. Their future episodes in the future. Coin that.
Yeah, put that on a t-shirt.
So the two new things that I'll bring up that are interesting, one, in regards to what you're saying, we've talked on and off about health stuff. There's been a couple times where we've talked about it too much, and I've ended up cutting most, if not all of it, from the respective episodes.
Fair.
And I won't do that this time. I'll only say that as of this last week, we're recording this on Monday, as of the end of last week, I have hit 2 months of consistently sticking to my exercise and dietary goals, which is the longest stretch I've had in 3 years, I think.
That's huge.
Yeah.
2 months?
Yeah, man.
Let's get the squad clapping for you here. It's just me, but, you know,
that's my whole squad,
a whole
man.
Auditorium of people clapping for you. Dude, 2 months, though, that's you're pretty much locked in at this point.
Yeah, it feels good.
You gotta
man.
Keep going.
I've lost 20 pounds
awesome.
In those 2 months.
Nice. Dang.
So we're rolling on the weight loss,
heck
getting
yeah.
things going. There were periods where I had totally stopped, but there was never any super long period where I stopped entirely trying to be physically active. I mean, you've been there for a lot of it where I was talking about, like, I'm starting up again or I'm doing this. And it was always like, I'm starting again.
Yeah.
And I've basically been doing that for the last 2 to 3 years. And it's finally sticking, so feels real good.
What do you think is different about this time? What do you notice anything that helped you to stick with it more than the last couple tries?
You know, I have no idea. I have a few theories. Like there are things that are different, certainly, and I have probably the most well thought out plan of where I'm going and what I'm gonna do after I get to my goal weight, and like it's all well thought out. I have things that I know I can do that I've allowed myself to kind of allow for sustainability.
Sure.
So there's stuff like that I could point to, but I'm not totally sure that it's only that. I think part of it is just trying for so long, because I've had this experience with a lot
just
of things.
Some of the efforts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had this experience with like when I was trying to get a consistent reading habit, it was the exact same thing. Trying to manage myself when I became self-employed, it didn't take nearly this long, but it was very similar, just trying and failing for long stretches of time, and then it clicks. And I wish I knew what, I wish I could just manifest the click right away. But I haven't I haven't unlocked that skill in any other way than just banging my head against the wall.
Right. That's interesting.
And like I it always feels hopeless and like I'm just failing and I'm just not meant to do it. But then eventually my head does break through the wall. I know this doesn't sound like good advice, but I swear it's working for me, okay?
Five concussions later. I did it. Oh, man. No, that's awesome, though. 2 months, man. That's great. That's one of those things, too. I don't know if you've experienced the same thing. It's kind of like once you've got it locked in, you don't even really need the motivation on some days.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you just get up and you just do it, and it's like, once it's become a habit, you know, that's when you're set.
It's just what you do.
Right.
The other thing... I don't think I've cut this out. We've never talked about it extensively, but I think there are bits that have made episodes that have leaned this direction. This year, 2021, has been a big year for me in terms of just kind of coming out of and to terms with some of the depression that I've dealt with over around the same period that the weight stuff is happening, which is not, that's not just correlation. There is definitely some causation there.
Right, right.
This year has been really, really good for me from a mental health standpoint for most of it, if not all of it. I mean, it's been better for all of it. It's just been kind of an upward trajectory for this year. And that's been really, really nice. The notable thing that's happened since the last time we talked that I wanted to update you on, last week was really, really bad from a depression standpoint. It was like the worst it's been since I was in the thick of it. We were actually supposed to record last Friday, and I postponed it. It was for that reason. I didn't want to listen to the album that we're listening to today that day because I was already feeling and, you know, it sucked and it wasn't good, and it definitely affected my productivity some. But I was able to, especially on Saturday and then Sunday, really rebound from it in a way that wasn't just, I guess I'm coming out of this now, but was intentional. Sure. And kind of utilizing the skills that I've been trying to accumulate over the last year, but had not had the opportunity to really test super hard. But they got tested, and Saturday was just a day of feeling better until the end of the day. I felt great, and then Sunday was tremendous, and I've been having a really good day today. And it feels really good to be able to say, like, oh, I did these things and was able to get out of it, as opposed to just sitting in it until it goes away.
No kidding. That's just I guess there's a certain level of self-awareness there maybe that you're kind of developing or getting accustomed to, like understanding better how to navigate that. That's awesome. So ups and downs, but you're saying in general you're trending up.
Yeah, man. Yeah, really figuring out how to, whether it's with the workout stuff or the mental health stuff, kind of bounce back after getting hit. Yeah. Like the attack hasn't stopped. It hasn't necessarily gotten easier. But I found, even with working out, when I have a day where I'm bad about my diet or I fail to work out or whatever, whereas before, it would really only take one day like that to set me off for weeks, sometimes months.
Yeah.
Now I can be back up within 24 hours to a week and going back as normal.
Gotcha.
And without losing progress physically or mentally.
Sure. That's huge. Yeah. Finding a way to manage that. Like really well. That's awesome to hear, man.
Yeah. I'm kind of trying to really celebrate it, which is why I bring it up here, because I'm like, this is good.
Yeah.
Bring it up. That's a good thing. Normally, I tend to undershare on stuff like that, I think.
And then
continue to prepare myself and have realistic expectations for stumbles and falls that can happen going forward, but know that this kind of thing is possible. It's happened. I've done it now. I know it's real. So I have kind of something concrete to attain for or to look forward to, I guess. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I imagine it gives some validity or some what's the word I'm looking for? I guess is it validity? I guess. Like confirming that in fact works and not just knowing it in theory.
Right.
I mean that's huge.
There you go, man. Those are my two new things since the last time we've done
this. Two huge steps. Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about in the intro or should we jump into it?
Let's get into it, man.
For those listening at time of release, this episode is a month late. That's Q's fault, but there's a follow-up being posted in an hour to make up for it.
So I know this is, you know, it's technically my topic and I brought the album, but I've been thinking about this album since it came out, like 2019, 2018.
Right.
So Oh, 2017. 2017. It's even older than I thought it was.
Hmm.
I've been thinking about this album for years now. I have a little bit of the advantage in that respect. This is new to you, so if you'll accept the break from form, I'd like to start with what your impression was of it.
Ooh, okay. Let me make sense of what I wrote down here. Let's see. I wrote down six songs that jumped out at me more than the others on there. It was such an interesting vibe because it almost felt to me sort of like reading someone's memoir, someone's journal, right?
Yeah.
Like this kind of chronicling this experience. And really the entire album is that, is kind of not necessarily chronologically, but we're kind of working through this and talking. There's a lot of parallels to nature that he uses, the mountains, the trees, like the lights on signal towers. Like there's certain imagery that he uses that I really like. And then the last song, Crow, is where he kind of breaks from that pattern. He's talking about his daughter, talking about them going on a trip or camping or something. I don't remember exactly, but basically it's the only song that breaks from that pattern and goes in a new direction, kind of, I guess, signifying that he's processed this to an extent and he's moving in this new direction. It's kind of a new chapter almost, which is something that I wrote down. And later when I was reading about it, I confirmed that, I think, on Genius Lyrics or something. I was very proud of myself for making that connection on my own. So I don't know that I liked the instrumentation all that much. It's not really my style. I understand like how he used it to drive the album forward, but I felt that it's disjunct, right? A little bit dissonant, and I think that that's on purpose.
Yeah.
But like I felt that there was maybe an overuse of that. I felt that it got a little bit repetitive. Like all the songs sort of sound similar to me.
Yeah, no, there's a similar vibe.
Maybe I need a second time through it or something. Which, you know, and that's an album shouldn't necessarily be judged by its variety. That's not necessarily the point of why you would group songs. Like I know that's something that people put a lot of value on nowadays for artists. Like, oh well, what's your range? Like actors, oh, you know, how many characters can you play? Like, and I don't know that that's necessarily a good judge of the value or the artistic ability of someone singing or acting.
Right.
So, but that was just an observation I had. So vocals were a little more varied. I thought that I like Seaweed, Forest Fire, Swims, Emptiness Part 2, Soria Moria, however you say it, which I meant to look into that story a little bit. It's like a Swedish or Norwegian folktale, I think, that the kid overlooking the Valley of Fog with the mountains in the background.
Right.
There's some deeper meaning to that. And I meant to look at it before the episode. Maybe I'll look at it when you're doing your expository remarks. But yeah, I have some more detailed comments, but maybe I'll save that for when we get a little bit more into the details. I didn't really like the instruments. I felt vocals were a little repetitive. I understand like why he used it. And I kind of graded on a curve too, given that this is a sort of a processing of grief for him, and it's different from a normal album, if I can say that, I guess. So it's, you kind of have to look at it a little bit differently. Oh yeah. The other thing he overused, which I think can be very effective, but he did it almost every song, was like this use of like 15 and 20 seconds of like static or like quiet. Like it's like in the studio, but they're not recording anything. And I felt that could have been used on less songs, but those, anyway, that's just a couple of remarks I had overall. Obviously brutal, you know, subject matter. You're talking about this wife that died, the counselor that dies too.
Right.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, like this is just such a bad hand this guy's been dealt. And but yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the storytelling. I liked the when he got into like existence, self-negation, of course the nature theme. I like the line you did most of my remembering for me from the first one. I think it was first or second one for me off the album. But anyway, yeah. So I have some more detailed remarks like that, but I guess I'll let you go ahead and go. But those were kind of my initial thoughts.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think this album is an interesting case study, and it's definitely something that I want to use to segue into broader subject matter. I think to start, There are two primary things, I guess three, that I want to pull from what you were mentioning. I'm taking notes on my computer, and it insists on bolding every new line. I really don't want you to do that. I don't know why. Anyway, the things that I want to pull from what you said. First, in terms of the technical aspects, I actually want to start there. You're right that there's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of choices in production that are consistent. And perception on that, I think, is bound to differ. There's, you know, your mileage may vary type of situation.
Sure. Right.
I think the more important thing is exactly what you said, which is that he's making a choice. He's creating a mood. And I think even some of the repetitiveness of it lends itself to that. And the environment that he's creating in a situation like that, for me, words like or methods of judgment like better or worse don't necessarily fully capture what I want to communicate, I don't think. Because it's more than I prefer this or that. It's not even so much about what is the most pleasant sounding or what would I most like to hear. It transcends that into this, we're getting to know a person here. It's a very intimate experience to listen to this. And in a way, it almost feels wrong. He's followed up this album with two other projects that continue to kind of meditate on this experience and where he is now. I've listened to the follow-up immediately after this, but I actually haven't listened to the most recent one that came out in 2019. I really need to. But in the one after, called Now Only, he talks some about that. Like, and it's even on the first track of this album, of A Crow Looked at Me, he talks about how this is not for art. It's not for thinking about. It's just real. And yet he's making it into art, right? And he continues to kind of play that out, because he made an album about his dead wife and his trauma, and then he had to tour that album and sing these songs over and over again to people.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, weird thing. So this intimacy is part of the reason why I'll stray away from language like that, because for me it would be like if I looked into your head and saw how you thought and be like, well, that could be better, you know. It's like it's irrelevant to me at that point. I don't say all that to like invalidate what you're bringing to the table. I think there's merit there, just to kind of express how I'm approaching it, if that all makes sense.
I totally understand that.
What that brings us to, surprisingly naturally, is what he's then doing. Like if it's transcending these technical aspects, and I mean there are elements of the technical aspects that I think are tremendous. I think the songwriting is deceptively simple in terms of what he's trying to achieve, and it's all very purposeful and effective in a lot of it, and even little details that you would never know, like we talked about it in the last episode in preparation, the fact that most of the instrumentals here are produced with her instruments and in the room that she died in.
Right.
Like there's more here. And that leads me to the kind of escaping the technical nature of it. But then what are we escaping to? I think we're escaping to this larger idea of art that I want to talk about, because I think it's important, and B, I think it has some very personal implications that I would like to get into. But I really think that art at its best, and maybe always, just sometimes it's not done well, but art at the very least at its best is a sacred thing. It's something that surpasses the sum of its parts. It taps in to a part of us that is not simply material or explainable. You were, interestingly enough, kind of talking about that in the intro, this idea that you would need a palate cleanser for an album like this, or that you need to watch what music you're listening to in general to modify your mood. I know there's a materialist reading of that, and you could say, yeah, you know, certain sounds produce certain chemicals in the brain, and that makes you happy and or sad.
Right.
I really think it's more than that, and I think most people would agree with me on that. And I think this album is a great example of the sacredness of art. It transcends music. If by music you mean instruments and notes put together with words over the top, it transcends that and becomes this experience of getting to know a man, getting to know trauma, getting to know the death of your wife. No matter who you are, whether you're, like for me, I can read in a lot of personal experience into it. I have a wife. She's alive. And I'm grateful for that, especially after listening to an album like this.
Right.
But I can peek into his experience. Or I have a 2-year-old son. At the beginning of this album, his daughter is 1.5 years old. So like, I have very specific images that I can tie to some of what he's talking about. But I think that the ability to empathize and in a way live this experience is universal for anyone that's willing to really sit and engage with what has been put down here. You, a single guy, can in some small way experience what it's like to lose the love of your life. And that's incredible. That makes this great art to me.
I think, in answer to something you said earlier, I think the art definitely has the capacity to be sacred. I would say that because we as creators of that art give it some sort of validity, I guess, to use that same word. Is another word I keep trying to think of, and I cannot for the life of me think of what I'm trying to say. It's another word like that. I don't know. We give it the ability to have that. Depending on your religious beliefs, but you and I would say we are created beings.
Right.
And so I think the capacity for us to do that is something special, and it is something very intimate. And this certainly very much so, such a deep, again, like I said, feel like reading someone's journal, and you shouldn't be.
That's what it
felt like. So definitely agree that it has the capacity to have that element. And I think that would be one of the metrics of great art. Certainly not the only one, but I think too. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things like Manchester by the Sea.
I love that movie.
Like, that's for me and my personality type. That's one of those like watch once and never again movies. Just because it's so, I mean, it just evokes so much emotion. Like, I mean, I like that scene where he's in the Casey Affleck, which probably won him the Oscar. That scene in the where he's talking to the two cops in the station, like, oh my gosh. It's like, you know, I'm sitting there crying. I was like, I can't relate to any of that. Of course I can't talk about on the podcast because I don't know who all knows that. So never mind. We'll take that out, but you know who I'm talking about. But like, I mean, I'm like, if I was to blame or in some way responsible for that, I would never, ever forgive myself.
Right.
And that part he talks about where he's like, you know, it's never going to leave, you know, fully like this feeling or whatever. And so, yeah, but in answer, kind of in response or in conjunction with what you're saying, I think that movies like that, art like that, that is able to bring you to that point where I have such an emotional response, even though I've never been in a situation like that. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a teenage nephew who I've been charged to take care of. All these things, I've never lived that, but can empathize in some way so powerfully with that. I think that you're right. That is a very good metric of the quality of a piece of art.
Yeah. One of the things that I really appreciate about this record specifically, I don't know much about what's his name? Phil? Yeah, it's Phil. I don't know much about Phil's faith life. I don't really know much about him as a person, honestly. I know his music, and that's pretty much it. I don't necessarily want to imply that all of this is something that he's intended or like a secret message. I think part of art is, you know, what you take away from it, apart from the artist too. But I mean, I get the impression that some of this is intentional. Well, I'm just trying to make sure that it's not, that the ambiguous nature of it is explicit. Point being, unnecessary caveat concluded. I think there's this transcendent, sacred nature, right, that we're talking about on kind of a metatextual art philosophy level. I think within the text of this album specifically, there's a wrestling with the spiritual that I think is, I don't know, it's potent. It expresses this, what's the right word for it? This super material reality that I think we experience and we've seen, but we rarely articulate. And having laid the groundwork for the capacity of art to be sacred, to live in that realm, music becomes the perfect way to express that. He expresses these notions of loss and emptiness and the feeling of losing someone in front of your eyes physically, materially, and then losing them in your memory, losing them in your day-to-day experience, and seeing them in everything. I didn't look at Genius. I wonder if you'll remember if they commented on this. But at the very end of the album, the last thing that happens, we have this whole thing about the crow following them, his daughter murmuring in her sleep about the crow, and then he sees the crow. Right. The crow looked at him. Oh my goodness! And the last line is, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty sure this is almost exactly right. Is, and she was there.
Oh yeah,
like this,
yeah.
her presence. There's this right. supernatural element under the current, and it's not flashy because the supernatural, I think, rarely is, but it is there. There is more than the material. I think to listen to this album and come away with, yeah, you know, his wife was there and then she was gone, and that's that. It's like there's so much more to this human experience and to what we do as humans in living it and in some ways fighting it. Like one of the songs he talks about the forest fire and how it's burning away and there's new life, and he compares it to what's happening with him. And then, and it could, in most poems, that would be the end. It's like, ah, it's like nature. But for him, he says, I reject it. I disagree. It's not right.
Yeah.
It's wrong that you're gone. This is not how it should be. There's just so much to even that one idea, much less this constant refrain of nature and seeing her in everything, and how that mourning just infects everything. There's a very real right. spiritual, metaphysical reality that he's exploring here that transcends the kind of memoir-esque, this is my life, we did this one day, we did this, I saw these people, I went out to the island, I went out to the house that we were going to build, this kind of stuff. That is the surface level of it. There's so much more going on beneath the surface of his writing that is really, really powerful stuff, I think.
Yeah. I think to your point, that's interesting. I hadn't really noticed that, going back to what you said kind of at the beginning, when you talk about you lose them, you lost them first physically and then in memory.
Mm.
And there's this part where, because it's funny you said that, and I remember this lyric, and I just had to look it up to confirm that I remembered what it was. But he says something about, did you like Canada Geese? Like, I don't really know. I don't really remember. Is that even significant? Right. Kind of this whole thing is like these moments that he's kind of starting to either forget or sort of misremember. And then also that theme of that he uses of, I mean, you have a lot of, which of course, maybe obviously the album has a bird's name in it, but there's a lot of bird references right. in there. But that's the first one, the first song, I think. But that's just interesting. I didn't really notice that those were two separate things, which of course kind of goes back to the quote, like you die twice, yeah. right? Once when you physically die, and the next one, the last person, you know, forgets you or doesn't remember.
Yeah,
you,
we live on. That's another line in it, is we live on in the confused memories of the people trying to wrestle with our loss.
Powerful stuff. Maybe this is more surface level, but I like the critique of, or the mention of, like, how fragile human life really is. He says something like how close we always are to non-existence. Yeah. I think is really, it's an interesting description. It's kind of like you're immortal too, or not, right? Like, we kind of just assume we're always going to be here, and we just don't, I mean, maybe that's obvious, but I just thought that was an interesting way that he described it, like how close we always are to non-existence. I think that's really interesting.
No, I very much agree. There's a larger significance. There's kind of eternal themes that he's playing with, and it's tied into his experience in very obvious and overt ways, but that allows him to kind of talk about these eternal themes in a very grounded way. I think if you're going to talk about death, you can quickly kind of dip into cliche and, you know, kind of like the cliche goth teen stereotype. And he kind of even makes fun of that a little bit. Yeah. Like, death was so much more fun when it was an idea that we could speculate about. But this isn't that. Right. Real death isn't that. It's not fun. It's not something you sit around the campfire, you know, having fun about. It's it's much more than that. It's much more terrifying than that. But we pretend it's not. And if anything, that's a coping mechanism.
I like the Nirvana sounding guitar. I guess I'm maybe because I play different instruments. I just noticed that stuff. But I like the Nirvana sound and
stuff. I like when he starts to experiment more with the instrumentation as it goes along too. Starts incorporating more drums.
Yeah.
More electric guitar, piano. I hate it, but I love it. Whatever drum sound he's using that sounds kind of like someone breathing through an oxygen mask. It's very, very unsettling. Oh
yeah, it almost sounds like a, yeah. It's kind of off, like non-metric kind of beat. It's like, it sounds like a brush on a drum, maybe, if I had to guess, but I don't know. That was very effective. I noticed that the electric guitar is added in the second to last one. I think the Soria Moria, which actually I want to talk about because I just found the page on it. It's actually really interesting. So it is a Norwegian folktale. It's about this kid who he's like this peasant or something, and he goes on this adventure, and the storm blows the ship off course with this guy he goes off with, and they land on some, you know, mystical island, and this princess finds him at this castle. And so then he wishes himself back because he wants to, you know, show his family all this stuff, and they tell him not to mention the place to his family, which then I think he does. And then he can't find his way back. It says, the Norwegian Soria Moria castle is probably one of the best known Norwegian folktales. A search for the castle might be thought of as a progression, the symbol for perfect happiness. According to legend, the path to the castle is not clearly marked, and the journey is solitary because all people are different and therefore cannot reach the goal in the same manner. Painted in 1881. But yeah, and towards the bottom it says, musician Phil Elverum mentioned the painting of the castle and chasm on his 2017 album, A Crow Looked at Me, using it as an allegory for the seemingly untraversable path taken to escape grief. So I didn't really understand the context of that till I looked at the story. But it's actually it's a really cool painting. I like it. It's kind of I'm not sure how to describe the style. Expressionist, maybe. It's not super detailed, but it's like this little boy looking out towards the sunrise, all this fog in between.
And I think there's stuff like that too that, I mean, I've listened to this album 3 times. It's not something I go back to frequently for obvious reasons. I think there's a lot of stuff like that that can be over our heads. He's very much embedded in the world, in the atmosphere that he's creating. And because so much of it feels casual, I think we can be tricked into thinking that it is casual or that it's off the cuff, when the more you dig into it, the more evidently planned everything becomes. There's a lot of of layers. There's a lot of depth. Even in something like that, pulling on folklore, pulling on various imagery and archetypes that aren't even necessarily that explicit. He's really working with a wide breadth of not only his own internal logic, but also interacting with texts and music that are beyond this specific album. And because we're not familiar with everything, there's a lot of what he's saying that can go over our head. And I think that's another thing that makes a piece of art really rewarding to go back to, because the more you experience, listen to, read, when you go back to something as dense as this, the more you appreciate it and understand what he's doing.
I think that's maybe another good metric too. That's a good point, is like the rewatch value, for lack of a better description, of a piece of art. Again, not the one and only that you would use, but I think that is definitely very, very valuable, because I think it speaks to the complexity of something, or the depth of it, right? That we don't understand it just at face value.
That's kind of funny what you said about it being kind of relaxed. I guess, it's sort of a relaxed style, because it kind of just sounds like a guy to me, like in my head, I imagine him kind of like on a recliner, like the guitar kind of just in his hands, and he's like, you know, sitting there leaning back, just kind of strumming it kind of absent-mindedly, but, you know, and saying these lyrics or thinking these very personal thoughts. And I think that's an interesting point, because I think that style, it feels so relaxed. Again, feels like a guy kind of just writing down these thoughts he's been having in this journal that no one else is supposed to read. And that's what you're looking at. It's this very deep picture of his mind and his state of mind, but the sound of it sounds very relaxed, I guess. Informal. So it's kind of an interesting disparity between the two, between the vocals and the lyrics and the instrumentation.
Definitely. Yeah, it can definitely trick you into thinking that there's not
there's
not as much thought being put into it as there is. And I mean, I think that's kind of a nice thing to give yourself over to as well. Just let it wash over you. You don't necessarily need to analyze every little thing as it's happening.
Agree.
That actually brings us to an interestingly nice segue into one of the other things I want to talk about, which kind of transcends this specific album, but is nonetheless connected. And it's one of the things that I think this album does so well. We've kind of touched on it in parts. It's art's unique ability to be transcendent, to be sacred. It's one of the only sacred things that I think everyone acknowledges on some level, no matter your background, right? We all have connection to some piece of art. And we know that connection is special regardless of how we might express it. And I think art for me has really helped in the last year as I've been changing a lot and growing a lot and moving. And it's helped me to express ideas that I didn't have words for. And it goes back to that transcendent, unwordable experience. I think culturally, and especially outside of any kind of culture, we live in a society type stuff. For me personally, I'm very word focused. Everything needs to be in words. It needs to be compact and understandable and controllable and understandable. So dealing with things that are, or even acknowledging the existence of things that cannot be compressed through words, is a big deal for me. And even understanding that when you put something to words, especially something that is an experience or a real thing, you are in some way reducing it. A simple example, so we can keep this a little grounded and not too off the deep end. If I say the word to you tree, or I say, James, think about a tree, I can use words there to evoke your experience of whatever a tree is, right? But the meaning is compressed twofold. One, because we're probably not thinking about the same tree, so you're already importing your own experience over mine. But secondly, you're not there. You're in your apartment recording a podcast. You can't see the tree. You can think about it. You can remember it. But you can't feel it. You can't touch it. You can't climb it, right? That experience is compressed and changed and somehow made smaller when we put it into words. There are these things, whether it be the tree or we get into much bigger things like here, death, that we can't put in words. This album is a completely different experience if you just read the lyrics as a journal or a memoir, like it feels, right? The music, the delivery, even I think the environment and the instruments he's using all are contributing to a piece of art that transcends the sum of its parts, like I said before. And there's a lot of pieces of art that have contributed to me, or that have helped me this year. This is one of them. Going back to name someone a little more mainstream, to Mac Miller's last two albums has really helped. Those two records really, they've been probably my most consistent listening since they came out. And it's, I mean, again, connected to death, not to be more, everything comes back to death apparently. But I remember when Swimming came out, It was I was always like I liked Mac, but I was never a huge fan or anything. He always had some issues that I couldn't get past in terms of just like someone that I would go back to all the time. But then Swimming came out and I loved it. It was unlike anything I'd ever heard him make, and it blew me away. And I was excited. I knew I was gonna. I was like, this is the year I see Mac on tour. It's gonna be great. And then he freaking died. Mm. And it was over just like that. I mean, he was what, 26?
Mac Miller is one that I definitely want to check out more of. So I'll probably do that
before. Yeah, man, do it. Yeah, Mac, well worth checking out. And I think, you know, the events around it really make those albums a lot more surreal, because he was already wrestling with death and life and what all that means on both of those albums quite a bit. If not entirely. So it really makes the whole thing super surreal. And he, in a much different way, accomplishes something very similar to what I experienced with The Crow Looked at Me, which is this transcendent look at just a human experience. Not even the human experience, a human experience. He's capturing something. He's capturing a mood and a vibe and an atmosphere, something that's beyond words. Like, as all this was happening, I wasn't necessarily thinking of it as working together. But I think the thing that brought it all into focus for me was watching Andrei Tarkovsky's Stalker. Are you familiar with this film?
No.
So it's an incredible film. I highly recommend it. It's a very artsy Russian sci-fi film. I won't get too much into it because it's a whole other, you know, like 2 hour thing, but in one sense, it's about like a million different things, but in one sense, it was very much about Tarkovsky as an artist trying to wrestle with his role and in what he does and what he's doing in this film and in his work, and visualizing it as trying to bring someone to the door of this greater experience, this greater reality, the transcendent. And there's this beauty there, right? But there's also this mourning that is expressed in the film of him, of the fact that he can only offer the opportunity. He can bring you to the door, but he can't force you to go in. He can't make you see what he wants you to see. But he can give you the opportunity to. And I think as I've wrestled a lot with what I think, with what I believe, with faith in the last year, a lot of it, if not all of it, comes back to the desire to have a worldview that has the most possible respect for the unfathomable, the unwordable, the indescribable, right? Like, even now I'm doing it injustice because I'm attempting to describe something. It's beyond us. And that doesn't mean that there's nothing. Weirdly enough, it might seem counterintuitive, but as I've been going through all this, I've become less postmodern than I probably was beforehand. Because I don't think that having respect for the unfathomable necessarily means that you have to give up everything or that there's no meaning. I think there are ways that we can interact with it. And again, that's a whole other thing. But what this art does is give room for the expression of the unfathomable, of the unknowable.
Right.
And for me, when I'm interacting with whether it's those albums or this film or any number of hundreds of pieces of art like them, it reminds me of our smallness in context of the what is ultimately a grandiose, massive, and to use the word yet again, unfathomable universe. And we need to have respect for that. And I think any worldview that doesn't, not even just respect, but a kind of primacy for that reality, I think is incomplete. And I think that's where a lot of my frustrations and the need for what this last year has been for me came from, was that so much of what I was raised with and surrounded by even now is our attempts to grasp the ungraspable. I get so tired of reading philosophers or theologians trading tomes and talking about how they, you know, if you would just look around, it's obviously this. And then the next guy comes with his 2,000-page document and says, well, that guy is a f-ing idiot. And actually, if you would just use your common sense, you would know it's this. And then the third, and it's on and on and on. I'm so tired of that. And I think that kind of thing is what made me as postmodern as I was for a time. And I mean, there's still elements of it that I would definitely fall within, even if I haven't earned the title postmodern in its totality. Yeah, I don't know. That's a classic monologue without a good ending from me. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking about, feeling at the moment.
This whole show is one monologue without a good ending. That's kind of what we do here. No, I agree. That's something. To be honest with you, I haven't thought really much about it at all. Which of course we're two different people, which is good because if we were the same people, this show wouldn't be very interesting.
We're two different people.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy? I just had that realization just now. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be very interesting if we both had all the same experiences in life. But yeah, that's something I haven't really thought about at all. Not to the amount that you have, or not to the extent which you have. And it hasn't affected me, I don't think, very profoundly in the way that it has you. I think you're absolutely right in that no worldview can possibly be complete without acknowledging that. I mean, it's just the very nature of our universe is unknowable, right? We have no clue the extent of it. We don't even know. We explored what, 5% of the oceans. Like there's so much we don't know. And that's just the physical world around us, much less the spiritual. So I think, yeah, I think that, and like what you're talking about with Joseph in the last one, I think that, or the one before that, is that the best realization is to know that you don't know anything. And that's kind of all we can do. But there's a lot that I think it's a personality thing too, maybe for both of us, but there's a lot that I'm content with just saying, yeah, I'm not going to understand that on the side of reality. Yeah. It's just not possible for me to grasp it. And you can use, you know, it's like the Trinity, like you can use whatever analogies you want to use. But again, like you're talking about, that's reducing something so vastly incomprehensible down to say, well, if you think of a three-leaf clover, you can maybe understand this infinite being that expresses themselves or himself in three unique ways. Like, it's so stupid to try to reduce it to that. But anyway, so yeah, I guess I have thought about it a little bit, but it sounds like it's really impacted your life in a very, very deep way. Does that kind of go into what the interactions you've had with some of your friends in commerce?
It's related, certainly.
Any of that?
I mean, like I said, yeah. This all kind of ties back to the faith conversation and everything else. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing because, like, everything I just said, I think most people would nod along to for the most part. But if they didn't, they're very confident. and you know, those people exist. I don't fault that. You be confident. I envy that. Go for it.
There are some people that just don't. Again, I think it's a personality thing too. It's like it's just a characteristic. Like they just don't know, or they just don't really care. It's just, I guess, a more material approach. Like it's like, yeah.
Why does that matter? Well, I think the conflicts there came less from that specific idea and more from the therefore statements. I could say all of that and we can nod along for the most part, aside from our very confident brethren. But then we say, okay, we agree, therefore, that's where we get into more controversial territory, I think. And who knows, maybe that'll be a future episode. You never know.
Next week,
the ultimate follow-up.
And a huge departure.
The best thing about the past is that it's over. When you die, you wake up from the dream that's your life. Then you grow up and get to be post-human in a past that keeps happening ahead of you.
What do you need to tell the people before we go, James?
Clean your earbuds, boys and girls. Don't just walk around putting them in your ears. If you want to be happier in life, run for 2 hours a day. What else?
If you've gotten any piece of advice from this episode, it should be that.
Right. That was my number one takeaway. Don't get rear-ended.
You've been going through it. Ear infection, rear-ended, trying to finish school and all the hassle that comes with that.
I know, man. Yeah.
I'm trying to do some hiking this month. I need to hook up. Hook up is a bad way to say it. I need to go meet up with my fam in Charlotte. But I don't know, man. What about you? God, I'm really falling apart here at the end. What's your, I don't know, reduction, I guess, of the, what do you want to say in closing? That was horrible.
What do I want to say in closing? I want to say, listen to Sour by Olivia Rodrigo, James's pick for our next album.
Oh, yeah.
Look forward to it.
I think you are going to be on Nat and I's show soon to talk about a book. Do you want to tell the people what that is?
The Last Day of a Condemned Man by Mr. Victor Hugo himself.
I'm going to go try to check that out from library. Yeah, I think Nat and I are coming off of a Great Gatsby. And I think we'll either do his one he wants to do called like Electric Sheep.
Do Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, like the classic by Philip K. Dick.
Yes, backwards. Yes. I got it backwards. Yes, that's the one. We're going to read that one, I think, and then we'll have you probably come on in.
Sick.
So, anyway, look forward to that. Dundee Estella
Linked
Biblioteca
in the show
on
notes.
All platforms.
If you don't want to type all that out.
Yes, sir.
That's it. Beautiful. We will see you 1 month from now, the first Wednesday of every month. Sometimes. Most times, even. But sometimes not, also. So tune in then, and either find out that I'm telling the truth or that I'm a liar this month. But whichever, we'll see you next month for sure. We are good about getting it out, even if it's not on time. So tune in every month for another episode of Nil. Feel free to reach out on social media. Drop us a DM. There's the occasional post from Mr. James when he feels like it. But if you want to talk, you want to let us know what you think, best way is to reach out. Mano a mano. Good night, Genevieve.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night, and God bless America.